All right, so according to what Mickey told me at the end of class last week, we're getting ready to do question 25 out of the question sheet for lesson 35. And, of course, be aware that none of these questions are in the book. You have to have the lesson sheet from 35. And since there's only a few questions left, we'll probably end up going into the next lesson, which, according to my calculations, the one after 35 will be 36. And, I've done math. And it is also a review. So that lesson 36, then, is a review of Old Testament empires. And no doubt all of you have the question sheet for that also, because it's already been passed out. Review of the Old Testament empires. Looks like I already have an original. And then what I intend to do is, I had intended to do this morning, but the copier got stuck, is to give you the questions for Lesson 37. So as we go into Lesson 37, what you can do is just follow along and sort of fill in the blanks as we go. And then that way things will work out a little better. All right, so lesson 35 questions, starting with question number 25. So what we're doing is we're just reviewing the lesson of Jerusalem is rebuilt, right? So I believe that's the title for lesson 35. Yes. So Jerusalem is rebuilt is actual lesson that we're working on. And so we finished that, and we're looking through the questions and got through question 25 last time. So we'll probably just quickly go through this. I think there are only about 30-something questions. Ooh, I have the answers right here.
Which one are you starting with? 25? We didn't answer
25. Yes, start with 25. The what? 325. Oh, sorry. 225, maybe. All right. We got as far as 25, and we will attempt to get as far as 31 today. All right. In Ezra 7:10, it says that Ezra had prepared his heart to do what? What is it that Ezra was going
to
do?
To study all the will of God.
All right. So, seek the law of the Lord. That's what Ezra's plan was to do. And so he was very zealous to do that. Yes, Randy.
I was going to say that's a good memory verse.
Oh, yeah.
7:10, that's where it set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to practice it and to teach his statutes and ordinances in Israel.
Sure, Ezra 7:10 is a great one to have.
Study, practice, and teach. That's what Ezra's life was all about. Study, practice, teach, study. That's a great example for us. That's
yeah.
And
the
study, the
words they have in the American Standard are seek, do, and teach. So, yeah, excellent point that Ezra 7:10 is a good one for us to keep in mind at all times. All right, then who asked permission from King Artaxerxes to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the city walls? Who did that? Pardon?
Nehemiah,
right. So it was Nehemiah that did that. Now, who went first, Ezra or Nehemiah, as far as going to Jerusalem goes?
Ezra,
sure. Because Ezra went down there, and I believe he was part of the impetus that helped them at least to finish building the walls. I think Ezra was involved in the building of the walls. I'm not positive about that. I have to go back and look. But we realize that, in the building of the temple, the walls were Nehemiah. Get them straight here yet.
Nehemiah was the one that, this family, this section.
Right. He made all the assignments around the whole place. And so, now, it had been 90 years. Let me, if I put my glasses on, I can probably see. But 90 years since Cyrus gave permission for the Israelites to return home. So, Cyrus gave permission to them to return home in about 538 BC, and at that time, 49,300 and something, 97 people returned home. Anyway, about 50,000 people returned home. And then when Ezra went later on, how many people went with him and what kind of people were they? No. No, the priests and it was priests and Levites that went with Ezra, and then Nehemiah later on when he came, he just essentially came by himself, except you know what company there was to keep him from being set upon by robbers. But and then so who was head of bringing the first 50,000? Who was that? We don't have him on here.
Zerubbabel.
And Shealtiel, though people have think that Shealtiel may be just some sort of title for Zerubbabel, because his name doesn't appear a lot of times. So Zerubbabel brought the 50,000 in the first coming back, and then Nehemiah, was that fun or what? Yeah. Nehemiah then brought an additional couple or 3,000. I mean, because it talks about the males that were brought, and when you add them all together, the males come up to 1,776. But it talks later on in one of the verses about the little ones. So it would appear that they didn't just abandon their families in Babylon, but came down with all of them. So we might suspect that if there were 1,776, there were probably about 4,000 people that came down with Nehemiah in the second return, with Ezra in the second return. Then finally, Nehemiah asks permission from King Artaxerxes to build the city walls. And then, now, as I say, it had been 90 years since Cyrus gave permission for the Israelites to return home. Nehemiah, it says, was grieved when he arrived and saw that everything's still a charred pile of rubble. The only thing that had been built was what?
The people's
house. The what?
The people's house. Oh, the temple. But the
The temple had been built already. And then later on we find out that they're supposed to be building walls and things like that. But anyway, so the people had waited, how many years was it to start building the temple though? 16. I think we had gotten that between king names and things like that. The Bible doesn't just come right out and say it was 16 years, but it was between the such and such year of such and such a king and another year of another king. And so it turned out to be 16 years. Finally, when they did get around to building the temple, how long did it take them to build it? 4 years. That was it. It was 4 years. So they waited four times longer than it took them to build it. So, but as Lynn said, they spent their time building what? Their own houses. Yeah, their own houses. So they had a bunch of houses themselves. Okay. Did I get the next one up? No. All right. Now when Nehemiah comes down. Ezra and Nehemiah. Everybody's there. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, who knows how. Anyway, it actually mentions in one of the names, it mentions the name Mordecai. Now, I don't know that how popular the name Mordecai was, but obviously he was around in this time, but he was up in the palace Shushan up in Babylon. There's no indication that he ever went to Jerusalem. But it is interesting to note when you look at the names of the people that built the walls or that came down with Ezra, that Mordecai, the name Mordecai is in the list. Interesting tidbit. All right. With everyone's help, after a little bit of persuasion from some of the prophets and things, which people and prophets had to do the persuading to get them to build the wall? There was a prophet and then one of the guys that came down.
Haggai.
Haggai spent a good bit of the book of Haggai talking about these people that need to get to work and things like that, that they built their sealed houses and all that sort of stuff. And then, of course, Nehemiah, when he came down, was rather grieved that everything was, you know, the gates were all burned and the walls were down and they had plenty of time. It had been 90 years, et cetera, et cetera. So, but once he got them all kind of stirred up and got everybody working and made the assignments and everything, how long did it take them then to finish the walls? 50 in 2 days was all that it took. So, now, The one thing that we want to think about is that this wall is not the extent of the Byzantine wall that you see around Jerusalem today, which covers a number of miles. Okay, I think it was bigger than the city of David, which was just the southern portion of the city of Jerusalem, but I don't think that it was quite as big as the wall is today, you might say. So, but anyway, still 52 days. Everybody was there to work. There, at least in the land of Israel, there were, you know, 50, 60,000 people there. I don't imagine they were all in Jerusalem, but there were plenty of people there to work. And so they got that done fairly expeditiously. We've already answered this. The delay in fixing up Jerusalem happened because the people put their personal welfare ahead of what? Yeah, that's right. They're concerned for God. Yeah. So they put their building program ahead of God's building program, and probably in two instances here. Joey?
As far as finishing the wall, I think there's a verse that's noteworthy where the scripture says that they did it because they had a mind to work.
They had a mind to work.
That's a noteworthy verse in this passage because it distills the idea that, well, we can't do that. We can't do that.
Yep.
So many people procrastinate and have excuses, well, I can't do that. When in most cases, you can do it. If you had the attitude to make it a priority.
Right, yeah. Right. It's much easier for me to go upstairs and get in my recliner and watch TV than to go outside and fix the sprinkler that needs fixing, which a rather minor case for this. I think I better turn my phone off before somebody does something. okay, yeah, it is correct. The Bible says that they had a mind to work, finally. They just needed some persuading. I note that in a couple of instances, like with Ezra and Nehemiah, there's a certain amount of hair pulling going on in certain instances too. We'll get to that also as we go along here. All right. Which two men were very distressed with the Israelites because the people had intermarried with their pagan neighbors, were speaking the language of Ashdod, were ignoring the Sabbath day, were not offering appropriate sacrifices? We've already mentioned both of these guys several times. Who's that? Ezra and Nehemiah, right. So, key characters in these chapters that we're looking at. And here's an interest. This is sort of, hopefully you're able to pick this out. The Israelites had to learn that God's promises of prosperity are what?
Conditional.
Very good. That's exactly right. Conditional. Yeah, especially if you had the answers. It was easy to come up with that one. Huh?
It comes down to work.
It does come down to work, yeah. Yeah, you just say, yeah, I got all the answers are right here, see? Okay. So, yeah, God's promises of prosperity are indeed conditional. What is the one unconditional thing that we can say about God toward us? Is that He loves us, okay? It's just like with our children. You know, we love our children, but woe unto them if they transgress, you know. Joey.
This is a reference to the promise of prosperity, but to draw an analogy, the promise that God has for us today for eternal life is just this condition.
That's right.
And there are ground rules that have to be met if you want the salvation that's available in Christ. It's not like everybody's going to receive it. The scriptures tell us, sadly, that the majority of the people will not receive it. Why is the path that leads to destruction? So the promise of eternal life is conditional as well.
Right. Right. So, yeah, salvation is conditional. The promises are conditional. It just reminds me of John, the first chapter, that says that, to very loosely paraphrase, that those that obey the Lord, they will be allowed to become children of God. Now that indicates that previously they were not. So another conditional thing. Randy?
I was just going to put it in the perspective of the promises to Abraham.
Abraham.
The land promise, the nation promise, the seed promise. The land and the nation promise were conditional promises. I mean, they were promises that came true, but if they wanted to keep their nation, they had to keep their land. They had to meet the condition of God. The seed promise was unconditional.
Yes, I see.
No matter how much Satan tried to thwart that to keep it from happening, God made sure it happened anyway.
Okay, right. So the land and the nation promise were conditional upon them doing something, but the seed promise was one that God had made, and it was gonna happen whether or not.
All nations of the earth were going to be blessed.
We're going to be blessed.
Nobody could stop that from happening.
Whether they liked it or not. Yeah. all right, I was going to bring up... all right. So, now the well, that's interesting. I didn't expect that. Let me see if I have to read. Okay, all right. Well, you got to see me as a, you know, cute 2-year-old. anywho, all right, so now the next lesson that we're looking at here, lesson 36,
is that one there, for which I have no copy, so you're out of luck.
Well, Richard,
yes.
It's exactly what's in the book, though.
It is what's exactly that's in the book. So yeah, if you've got the book, you've got a printed copy of the questions. So, yeah. No, that's not necessary. Actually, what I need to do when we decide that we're not going to just kill the copy machine is to make copies of the questions for lesson 37, which is the next lesson that we'll come to. So, all right. So, yeah. So, lesson 36 is in the book, and we don't have to worry about it. So, everybody's got that. All right. Now, what we're looking at is we see that lesson 36, the title, is a review of the Old Testament empires. Now, if we go, which is a review of lessons 30 through 36. So if we go to the table of contents in the front, that covers the fall of Israel, that has map number 14 of the Assyrian Empire in it. Judah's last days, that shows Judah after the fall of Israel in map 15. We had a review of the divided kingdom in 32. 33 was the captivity with a map number 16 of the Babylonian Empire. And then lesson 34, the rise of the Persians with map 17, the Persian Empire. And the one we just looked at, Jerusalem was rebuilt with map 18, which is Judah, the return from captivity. And so we're looking at all the way back then to, excuse me, the fall of Israel in lesson 30 when we looked at the review in lesson 36. All right, so that's how far back we'll be going. Okay, so when we get into these, then the questions that are there are these: tell which empire each king ruled. So when we look at Cyrus, then what empire did he rule? The Persian Empire, which we have shown right here, which was of the three empires that we've been studying, which are what?
Which is Babylonian and Persian.
Okay. The Assyrian, Babylonian, and Persian, or sometimes we call it the Medo-Persian. They've got Medo-Persian here. Because Media was this area up here, and Persia is this area down here, and they just kind of combined. Later on, they were very friendly to one another.
Is that
Media,
do you mean like Turkey?
Say what?
Media, does that mean like Turkey, and what else today?
No, Lydia is Turkey. Under here, under the Caspian Sea, and this area up here in the Black Sea, all this area down up here is Media. So here we have the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea. So
Syria today, part of Syria today?
No, Syria is down here somewhere. Okay. This would be part of Afghanistan and
Iran.
Iran's down here, right? So Iraq. I think Iraq is the one furthest to the east, to the west, right? I think. Yeah. So Iran is over here somewhere. And then Afghanistan, I think. I don't remember. Let's go look.
You have Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran.
Yeah.
From the coast.
Right. All right. If I come over, whoops, just went past them.
Unless you want to count Lebanon.
I don't want to count Lebanon. Nobody wants to count Lebanon. All right. So if I turn my sidebar on, oops, I've got my sidebar on. Just look at it, Richard. Borders and labels.
You're seeing bodies in water behind you on the screen.
You know what? It's yeah. That is, yeah, that's the Mediterranean that we're looking at there. And it does, doesn't it?
Hollow, that's Greece, right?
Yeah, that's Grecian. All right, I got things back now, I think. That more better?
Yeah,
okay. All right, so what do we got here? There we go. Okay. So, all right. So, here's... Oh, that was interesting. Here's Iran right here. What happened to Afghanistan? Didn't it, oh, it's over there. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Let me de-zoom this a little bit. So, here's our current country. So here's Israel right now. Here's Syria. Goes up quite a ways up there. Here's Iraq right here. So right next door to Assyria, I mean, to Syria, rather, I should say. And it has a common border with Turkey right here. So here, all this here is Turkey. And so the part that we saw on the other map that said Lydia, that was over here in east, western Turkey. So Turkey still goes all the way over here. So the Medes might have had some of this area up into what's now today Turkey, but most of that is Iran. Iran is a rather huge country. I'm kind of surprised. You know, I've never really studied it much, but it's a pretty big country compared to a lot of these others. And then Afghanistan is over here. I knew that it bordered Pakistan, and so that meant that it had to border India. And then so I was trying to figure out where Afghanistan was, but that's right. And then all the other stands are up here, Turkmenistan and all those other things that nobody in the world can pronounce, including the people that live there. So Saudi Arabia down here, and then here's the United Arab Emirates here in Oman and things like that. We hear about them in Egypt way over here. So now we know where we are, sort of, kind of. So we were here. I thought we were here. There we go. Yeah, I was kind of hoping it would work. Oh, but if I push the right button, it will work. Okay. So, all right. So that's what we saw. We saw, here's India here. So Afghanistan was here, and we never even looked at it on the other map, but Pakistan is right over here somewhere. And then, so Afghanistan, and then Iran took up most of this area here. And then Iraq and this area, Syria up here, and then Turkey took almost all the way up to here like this. So, yeah. So when the Medes and the Persians, the Medes, of course, were in this area, and the Persians were down here, okay? You never want to call a Persian an Arab. So even though they speak nominally, as far as Islamic people go, they speak the same language, the same official scriptural language as far as they're concerned. It's Arabic.
They call it Persian. I worked with a couple years ago.
Yeah, they have separate languages. Yeah. Yeah, they have Persian languages. They have and the Arabic language. But just as for a long time, Latin was the official language of the Catholic Church for reading scripture and things like that. So Arabic is the official language for the Islamic religion. They will tell you right off if you study with a person of the Islamic religion. Is that just because you've read the Quran in English doesn't mean that you understand it. You have to read it in Arabic in order to understand it. You know? Yeah, right. So, anyway, but if you were to call a person from Iran just because he's Islamic, call him an Arab, he would be highly insulted because they're Persians. They're not Arabs. They're not those swine Arabs that live down here in the desert. So, all right. So what were we talking about? Oh, kings. So then Nebuchadnezzar, who was he king of? What of, I should say.
Babylon.
Yeah, so Babylon. And we have here, of course, the new Babylonian Empire. The reason we have the new Babylonian Empire is because when the Assyrian Empire was in force, Babylon did have a bit of a kingdom, but it was very small. It wasn't enough to take over the Assyrian Empire, and they were nominally a piece of the Assyrian Empire. So that's why this is referred to as the new Babylonian Empire. And here, David, you can see where it talks about the Median Empire, that the Medes were up here in this area, and we see that their empire did indeed go all the way over to Turkey, at least half of it anyway, and then down here into some of what we consider to be Iran and perhaps some of Afghanistan today. All right, so that's good old Nebuchadnezzar. And then the next one, Tiglath-Pileser. Famous name, everyone knows where he lived, right?
Syria.
Okay, so he was the king of the Assyrian Empire, and at some time at least during the empire of the Assyrians, they were able to manage the Egyptian kingdom also, though it was kind of sort of a loose management, I think. They didn't really have a firm grip on that. Though when you start reading the history of Egypt, you realize that there were a lot of invaders that came forth, and that there was after a certain time, the pharaohs were no longer pharaohs that were native to Egypt, but they were from a foreign kingdom. All right, so they came all the way over here, not as far as the Indus River, which was over here. So they took, the Assyrian Empire had all the area there, took all of Iraq and Syria and Turkey and things like that, and came over here with a little bit of what we refer to as Iran today. All right, next kingly king, Sennacherib. Who's he?
Assyria.
The same one, that's right.
He wasn't, rolled up his ball and went home.
Yeah. What happened to Sennacherib?
His kids killed him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Isn't he the one with 185,000 dead guys?
Yeah, 185,000, those guys woke up dead one morning. Yeah, I think there's a question about that in here. All right, Belshazzar, fine guy. What was he doing when he lost the kingdom? He was partying, right? Didn't he see something that was a little disturbing to him? Handwriting. He saw the handwriting on the wall, which is one of those sayings that we use today. And if you were to tell people that that was a biblical saying, they'd say, I'll go on with you now. All right. So, Babylonian Empire.
Although specifically, he was called
a Chaldean. Yeah, I think the... let me see if I can go backwards on this. I'm not sure what the difference between Babylonians and Chaldeans is. I think it had to do with more, not semantic things, but just regional who people were. I thought there was something that seemed to indicate that the Chaldeans were sort of the worker bee ones. But anyway. Oh, by the way, because people will whine about this, they'll say, well, Belshazzar really wasn't king. Who was king? Starts with an N. Nabonidus. And isn't he on here? He was out of town. Yeah. Nabonidus spent a lot of his time out of town down here in the Arabian Peninsula. He fancied himself an archaeologist. And he wanted to go down there and check out all these places and restore things. So he just went down here. Is that the, I don't know. I can't see what that says. But, pardon? Nope, nobody can.
Weren't they considered co-regents?
They were considered co-regents. As a matter of fact, Nabonidus essentially turned the kingdom over to his little boy, Belshazzar. just went off exploring all by himself. So Belshazzar apparently just had a great old time about that. And it cost him the kingdom, cost everybody the kingdom. Okay. All right, Sargon. What? Sargon.
Well, you were saying how Belshazzar, he was kind of taking advantage, I guess, of being charged at the party. And they said, well, the cat's away. And he said, well, the cat's away, then what did
you think? Must be by the cats.
Yeah.
By other cats. That's right. That's right. Yeah, the cats, the bigger cats came in and took them out. All right. Sargon, really?
Assyria.
Assyria, okay. So he was part of the Assyrian Empire and managed to. And remember that with the Assyrian Empire, we still have the little pink area of Israel here.
Judah.
Judah. Or have I seen chapters that say Judah alone? You know, sounds very sad. Nabonidus, we already discussed him. Whose daddy was he? Belshazzar's daddy. All right, so given that we've already concluded that Belshazzar was the last king of Babylon, who do we suppose that Nabonidus was the last king of? Babylon, you're right. Okay, because as Lynn says, they were co-regents. They both, that was son and dad. Cambyses. Cambyses is not one of the names that we have in the Bible. So we know him by other names. So what did he rule? Randy.
We got a question.
No questions. I want the answer.
Press on.
Okay, question.
I have a note from when we had this class years ago, and I wrote Nabonidus, grandson of, and then I wrote N, which I assume means Nebuchadnezzar. Is that correct?
There's a, so the discussion about the writing of the finger writing on the wall, there's the mention by his wife and somebody else, and it talks about Nebuchadnezzar, thy father. And people say, well, they weren't really related. They go, well, yeah, but you start, they were, yeah, but you start reading through the you know, your historical books of secular history, you find out that, well, they may have been sort of kind of related in somehow.
The world ends off in that way. But that you know, 6 degrees of separation.
Yes, that's right. Right. Yeah, you get 100 people in the room and you're going to have the same birthday with at least one of them.
Well,
so
it's like, look at look at European history, Western European history. I mean, half of them are related to each other because of how royalty marries.
Right, right. So, and there was a lot of, when we looked at this, there was a lot of he married his sister and he married his cousin and he married this and that and the other thing. So it's indeed possible that Belshazzar or Nabonidus may have been somehow related to Nebuchadnezzar. The people that try to discount the Bible say, well, you can't show that there was any relationship at all. Yet twice in there in the discussion in the handwriting in the wall on Daniel 5, it talks about your father. Well, the phrase your father doesn't necessarily mean a blood relation, nor does it mean your direct next descendant, ancestor. It's just sometimes a sort of a titular thing. It's
like forefathers.
Forefathers, yeah, right.
A mentor.
A mentor, too, also, right, that's right. So, yes. All right. Cambyses. Who's that? Let me get my cheat sheet out here. There we go. So he reigned from 528 to 522 BC. He's also called Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes. So that makes him Medo-Persian. All right, I'm trying to remember now. This is the Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes of Esther, isn't it? No, this is the other one. Okay, this is the one where they wrote the letter, trying to get them to stop the work on the temple, and they wrote to this king and they called him Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes in the letter, and it turns out that's the guy whose name is Cambyses. So that's why we come to the conclusion that perhaps Ahasuerus and Artaxerxes are some sort of title of some sort, because then later on, Xerxes in 485 to 465 BC was the one that was around at the time of Esther, but in Esther he's also called Ahasuerus. Right? And I don't know that in the book of Esther he's called Xerxes at all. I'm not positive about that. All right. That clear as mud? I like these pictures. Artaxerxes, the second one we're talking about, Esther's person.
Persian.
Persian, yeah, that's right. So he was one of the Persian kings, and that's when Esther and Mordecai and everybody were running around in this area. I don't, this is not very clear at all, is it? All right, and then finally, Xerxes, as opposed to Artaxerxes. I've got here that Artaxerxes was Xerxes' son. That Xerxes was the one that was around at Esther's time, and Artaxerxes was his son. So I've got Artaxerxes from 464 BC to 424 BC mentioned in regarding Ezra's return to Jerusalem in Ezra 7, 1 through 6. But then Esther's Xerxes, called Ahasuerus, from 485 to 465. So Artaxerxes took over from Xerxes. But I believe it's in the book of Esther that Esther, of course, was from 478 to about 473, near as we can tell. And so Ahasuerus slash Xerxes, and then Artaxerxes. What it appears to be the case, as far as I was able to tell anyway. Yes, Persian Empire, of course.
Is there a list in the book that is chronological, similar to the kings of Israel?
I don't remember seeing one, but I was thinking of making one myself, because it's really difficult. That's why I wrote this little cheat sheet here.
Timeline.
And, yeah. So let me see if I can put something together and give something that makes sense. Half a cent. Yeah, here, I'll just copy this and send it out to everybody. You can figure it out. All right, the next one is this. We've already talked about this. Whoops. I can't put the answer up there. So, what kingdom, which empire did this 185,000 soldiers? It says he killed them, but actually what they did was they woke up dead. So, who did that? Yes, Assyria. That happened to, it happened to the Assyrians. And then, what's his name, went back home, right? Sennacherib went back home, and his sons welcomed him home with open arms. Unfortunately, they had knives in those arms. He didn't last very long. Where was he when he got killed? No, he was in the temple of his god, I think. And I think that's where they killed him. All right. Which empire, during which empire was Esther made queen? The Persian Empire, of course. And then Daniel served in the palace during these two empires. Which ones were they? Babylonian and Persian. So the person that would have been responsible for his taking away in 606 BC would have been what king? Yeah, sorry. For some reason I'm thinking of Cyrus. I thought, oh, that's the Persian. Anyway, yeah. All right, so these two empires, he served during Babylon and Persia. And then, So Daniel was even around with Belshazzar, right? He was called in to interpret for Belshazzar what the writing on the wall was. And at that time, Cyrus, I believe it was, walked in and took over. I think he was the first king, right? And then Nehemiah served as cupbearer to one of the kings. In which empire? In the who empire? The Persian Empire, yes. All right. And then what do we get? We got 10:30. So Sheshbazzar led a group back to rebuild the temple. Now, notice we used this name earlier and determined, along with Zerubbabel, we weren't sure whether Sheshbazzar was actually a name or a title of some sort. Okay, so, yeah.
Daniel 5 finishes with that same night Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was slain, so Darius the Mede received the kingdom at about the age of 62.
Darius, sorry. For some reason I get Darius and Cyrus twisted around.
But he was the second.
The second Darius, yeah.
Darius the Mede. I mean, Cyrus came first, when didn't he? And then Darius was the next king.
Well, this
this one says that Darius marched in and took away from Belshazzar, right?
Darius, yeah,
but that doesn't mean he was the first king of Egypt, does it, for the Persians?
I think it does. Let me see if I have him down there somewhere. Yeah, I got Cyrus first. I got Cyrus, Cambyses, and Darius the first.
I think this was one of those cases where Cyrus was the king and he appointed Darius to that post.
Oh, Darius was a soldier, so could be that maybe that's what he was. All right, it's another reason why I got to get this timeline. Figure which one is right. All right.
I just remember this came up one time, and I think that's what Vicky said, that Cyrus was the boss, but it was a huge kingdom.
Yes.
And he appointed men to take care of this part, and this part, and this part.
You know, all these things they call satrapies,
yeah.
And they appointed governors or rulers or whatever in each. What was 127 of them by the time the empire was fully established, I think? Whatever that means. And so, yeah. So, right. So maybe Darius was just his go-to man for this particular area. Did I get that right? Yeah. Anyway. Sheshbazzar, back to him. He led a group back to rebuild the temple during what empire? Yeah, it had to be Persian Empire, right? So, Sheshbazzar, as I said, just along with this, who was the main person that we're looking at? That we refer to in this coming back to
Zerubbabel,
right? There are a bunch of other people too, and so yeah. Nehemiah rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem during what empire? All the Persian Empire, right? So and Samaria fell. Now we're going back. Samaria fell to what empire? The Assyrian Empire. And then Jerusalem was burned to the ground during or by what kingdom? Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. And then during which empire was Nebuchadnezzar the best known king of this empire? I think we just answered that, did we not? And Jeremiah told his people to surrender during which empire? Babylonian. Where did they go, though? They went to Egypt, which God told them to not do.
Whatever you do,
don't go to Egypt.
Hey, I know. Let's go to Egypt.
Yeah. Which is, hey, somebody just said Egypt. Let's go there. Yeah. No, wait a minute. You don't understand. So, which empire? The kings uprooted all defeated people and moved them far from their homeland. What empire was known for that? That was the Assyrian folks. They really liked that. And they were pretty mean combatants, too. They didn't treat people very nicely. During which empire did the kings usually leave the people where they found them as long as as they were loyal? That was the Babylonian folks.
Okay. As long as they paid taxes.
As long as they paid taxes, that's right. Otherwise, they go in and beat up on them and take the taxes. So, during which empire the king gave all captive people permission to return to their homelands? Persian. Who was that? Cyrus. Okay. That's because he felt that the gods should go back to their homelands. So, this empire controlled the most territory. We discussed that right at the beginning. The Persian guys. Yeah. They had the biggest empire known up until that time and probably for quite a long time until the Roman Empire. This empire lasted the shortest time.
Babylonia.
Yeah, I guess we had the Assyrians around for quite a while. The Persians were around for quite a while. And Babylonia was kind of caught in the middle, I think.
70 years.
Well, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, it makes sense. Because Nebuchadnezzar, the first one, took them away in 606. And by the time that they came back, they were coming back under the reign of Persians. Yeah. Good point. Yes, this empire was known for its cruelty. I think we just discussed that. That's Assyria. And then this empire had a rule that its laws could not ever be changed.
Persian.
I th-
think we're actually out of time. Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. So what page are we on in the lesson book?
147.
147, question 18. Okay. Thank you.